Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Saturday show. Sabotage by the Beastie Boys. You know why it's perfect?
Because I'm a good producer.
Because you're a good producer. And Oklahoma is about 10 and a half minutes away from having their season sabotaged by K-State. Wow!
That was a better one.
Welcome into the second leg of Sports Saturday. Two-man relay team today. Joshua Briscoe had you from noon to 2. I'm going to take you up to 4:30 before I hand you off to the KU pregame show. Let's get into business and bring in our first guest right off the top, Matt Tate from KUSports.com and Lawrence Journal World. Matt, how are you on this beautiful fall Saturday across the metro area?
It is beautiful out there, and I have to admit something, though, Brad. I'm a pretty self-absorbed person. So while you were talking up sabotage there, I was thinking, well, is he going to connect this to me, and how do I do this? What is he talking about? But I like where you went with it a lot better, because that has nothing to do with me, and most things don't. I've learned that over time, but I'm still a pretty self-absorbed guy. So, but yeah, that K-State score in Manhattan is incredible. There's no question about that.
Well, I'm sure, and I've spent many an afternoon over in Lawrence covering the Jayhawks. And are you at the stadium right now? Is it a little too early?
A little too early.
Okay, so I trust you got the game on somewhere at your house, or. Been trying to catch a little bit of it during your prep. The reason it's relevant to our KU discussion is because KU and K-State play next week, so it is
exactly
relevant.
Exactly right, yeah.
But in watching this game, and the first half, K-State had a lead. They had to fight back to get it, and I thought, okay, Oklahoma's been messing around. I'm telling you what, Matt, in the second half, KU's come out and kicked ass from the start to this point with 9:13 to go and leading 48-30. They have thoroughly embarrassed Oklahoma. They have outcoached Oklahoma. They've outplayed Oklahoma. It looked like Oklahoma basically kind of went half speed the entire third quarter, like the life had been taken out of them.
Yeah, I haven't seen it all. To be honest with you, I didn't really plan to tune in at all, because K-State just hasn't been playing that well, and Oklahoma's Oklahoma, and I didn't see it going this way. So, what little I have caught, though, it does. It looks like K-State's just, bullying them a little bit, which, again, is a surprise. But I've seen a lot of Twitter messages and stuff, because, look, KU played really well in Austin last week, obviously had a chance to win that game, threw up 48 points at Texas. I think there's a lot of people believing that if they can come out today and get this win against Texas Tech, then that sets up a pretty big week for next week, and KU would have a chance to beat K-State for the first time in a millennium or two. I still think that's true. I mean, they have to play well today, and just because K-State's obviously playing lights out against OU doesn't mean that all of a sudden they're unbeatable, right? They still have issues, they still have flaws, and KU does as well. So we're way ahead of this thing now. But I've seen a lot of people saying, well, I guess we can't count on beating K-State next week now. And I mean, you shouldn't count on it in the first place. But beyond that, I think every week's just its own animal, and there's no reason to say, because two results happen 7 days apart, that still can't be in the cards. I mean, especially if KU goes out and plays well tonight. So, again, we're way ahead of this thing. They got to play well tonight. They got to get that thing tonight, which will be a tough task in and of itself. But if they do, they'll have a ton of momentum going into next week. They'll have K-State coming to Lawrence, and absolutely anything's possible then. But that's so far away right now, and so many other things have to happen first.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. The week-to-week changes in college football are just amazing. You're so high, and then you're so low. And, K-State had to slug it out at the end with TCU, and it wasn't pretty. It wasn't great. Today it looks pretty great, but it'll be certainly set up for a good sunflower showdown next week. And for Kansas, their job tonight is to keep the momentum going from last week. Now, some people might laugh when I say something like that, because they lost. And I've heard the term, no such thing as moral victories. Matt, me personally, I buy moral victories if you're a program like Kansas and you've had the decade that you've had, and then you go to Austin and you put 48 points on the board, you have a lead with a minute 11 to go and a chance to win. For me, I'll put that in the moral victory column. I have no problem saying that, and I thought they put on a good show with their new offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. I wrote a column about that earlier this week, that with Kansas football, there are moral victories. They're everywhere, and you should take them and embrace them and celebrate them and be excited about them, because that's how you turn the corner. You don't go from trash to great overnight. You have to take those incremental steps, and I think this program, this administration, they're very well, probably the players too, are very well aware of that. And so there's nothing wrong with walking out of Austin last week, disappointed for sure, but feeling like, okay, that might have been something we needed. That might have been a step in the right direction. And you hit it on the head. I mean, moral victories, they're tough, man. I get it. I understand why fans don't like them. I understand why, they're not the greatest thing to celebrate. But you said it, with Kansas, it's a different set of rules and it's a different set of circumstances. If Oklahoma wins this fourth quarter but still loses the game, it's not like any Sooner fans are going to go, well, hey, we won the fourth quarter. There's a moral victory. I mean, no, that would be ridiculous. But that is a national program that's a powerhouse year in and year out that probably is watching its national title hopes dashed a little bit, you don't celebrate moral victories when you're in their shoes, but when you're in KU shoes, you absolutely do. And you said it, it's all about the offense. It's all about Brent Dearman. And look, that was what people were so excited about when the bye week change happened. And his first impression was 48 points on the road at Austin, including putting KU up by a point with a minute left. So first things first, that's a pretty darn good start. If he can come out and, they don't have to score 48 every week. I don't think anyone's expecting that. I don't think anyone would even believe that. But if they can put up 30, 35, something like that today, and obviously especially if they win the game, you'll be talking about something significant happening that maybe does finally lead you to believe that this thing could be turning.
Well, let's kind of start with Brent Dearman first. Start first with Brent Dearman first, kind of repetitive there. But, he has been the talk of the town all week, being installed as the offensive coordinator over the bye week, getting some time to install. And look, I honestly, Matt, since I don't cover KU every single day, I cover them, but not every single day, I kind of thought, okay, Brent Dearman, I don't know much about him. They sent out the press release. I read his bio. I'm like, wow, he's kind of a small school guy. I know he made a stop at Auburn as a quality control kind of person, advisor. And I look back, and one of the things that KU was bragging about in their press release was, well, hey, look, at this small school, he had the best offense in the country, 560 yards a game. And I'm like, okay, that's a little much to expect at this level at a Power 5 conference. And you look back at the numbers from last week, and it was 569 yards with the 48 points, almost exactly the pace he put up at a really small school.
Yeah, I thought that same thing. I thought that was funny because you're right, it's hard to transfer those numbers to level, right? But at the same time, when he goes out there, his first chance to call a game at the Power 5 level and puts up almost those identical numbers against a pretty darn good team, you had to scratch your head and go, wow, maybe there really is something to this. And so we'll see. Right now, it's such a small sample size, obviously, and it'll be a small sample size even after tonight and even after next week. That's why I think, the next five games, if they continue to score into the 30s or into the 40s even, then going into the offseason, you'll be able to look at this thing and go, okay, wow, that their offense is there. Now, just when you start to say that as a Kansas football fan, you enter an offseason where you'd have to find a quarterback still because Carter Stanley's leaving. And,
yep.
And he's obviously fit really well into this offense. Even though you have a little bit bigger of a sample size, if that does in fact happen, you'd still be kind of starting over. And so really with KU football, it's all about just foundational stuff. I mean, it's a situation then where, yeah, you'd need to go find a quarterback and some other players around him, but you would at least go into an off season knowing, well, this is who we are, this is what we run, and now we're bringing guys in to fit into that system, to fit into that type of offense. And that's how you build things. So I think the next five games are really important for a number of reasons. But that's as big as any of them, because they just are so desperate to get something established that's a solid foundation. Offense, defense, culturally, it doesn't matter what it is. They've just got to find a way to get something established. And I think they're well on their way to doing it.
We're speaking with Matt Tate, covers the Kansas Jayhawks for KUSports.com and Lawrence Journal World. You can follow him on Twitter at MC Tate. KU and Texas Tech tonight at 6 o'clock. The network pregame show Starts at 4:30. We're going to take you right up to there. All right, Texas Tech in town today. They've been not great. They're 3-4, but they're 1-3 in the conference. So not exactly a sparkling record, but they've got a history with Kansas. They've won, you know, they're 10-0 in Lawrence, and they I'm trying to go back. I believe KU has only beaten them one time in their history, so it seems like KU has been the victim of some of their high-octane quarterbacks over the years, including Patrick Mahomes, who, if I remember right, was kind of banged up at the time and may have not played a full game against KU. But
yeah, they knocked him out of the game.
Yeah, and brought in, was it Schwarzik or Schwarzel? I can't remember the kid's.
There you go. It was a mess of a name. Yeah, it was all kinds of letters.
Yeah, it was like an S.
And he absolutely played lights out.
It was like S-Z-Y-M something. Yeah. But, KU has not had a great history against Texas Tech. But, again, you take your performance against Texas and build on it a little bit, and you're at home against Texas Tech, and that's a pretty good recipe to kind of end that streak against the Red Raiders.
I've been surprised by how many people are onto that same thought, present company included. I've got Kansas winning tonight, and I haven't picked Kansas, you know, lightly over the past several years. I mean, in fact, it's been hard to pick them at all, even when things look good. I thought they looked poised for a big win a few weeks back when they threw 48 up at Boston College. Looked great out there. Came back, had West Virginia at home. West Virginia's down. You know, that was a perfect situation, almost eerily similar to the situation they find themselves in. But even that week, I picked West Virginia. It just, you know, they weren't there yet. But this is different. I think now with the Dearman offense in place and the confidence coming off of last week and things like that, I just think this is one they have to win. You know, whether people pick it right or I pick it right or whatever, it doesn't, none of that matters. But this is – for the program, I feel like they have to win this game. This is a game that Vegas is telling them they should be in. And Vegas doesn't miss often, you know, if at all. So they're a 3-point, 4-point underdog at home. You know, if you're trying to build this thing and get it turned around, you have to go out and find a way. It doesn't have to be pretty. It doesn't have to be, big offense. It doesn't have to be a shutout. It doesn't have to be anything that other people want to see. It just has to be one more point than the opposing team. And if they can do that, then you mentioned it, the momentum builds from there, because even though they lost last week, I think if they're able to win tonight, they'll almost move forward feeling like they're on a two-game winning streak. And then you take that kind of vibe into K-State at home, the Sunflower Showdown, all that stuff, and there's no telling what can happen there. So, it's such an enormous game for so many reasons, and yeah, I mean, their history against Texas Tech is one of those. That, you know, they've had some moments where they were in the game against Texas Tech. I'll never forget the game down there. I think it was a double overtime loss during some of the lean years. In James Sims, Tony Pearson, they were absolutely phenomenal in that game, running the ball for KU, and KU had a shot. They went all the way to two overtimes in Lubbock, you know, so there's one they almost got. A few years, right around that same time, I guess, maybe the year before, Charlie Weiss was the coach. It was, a homecoming game. I think late night was the night before. Charlie Weiss told everybody, come out and get with us, and we'll do some special things on homecoming tomorrow. And you know, next thing you know, KU jumps out to a 10-0 lead in the first quarter, and you're thinking, oh man, maybe this is a different day. And I don't remember the final score, but it might have been something like 45-10 or something like that. The wheels just fell off after that tremendous start. So they've had times where they've looked like they can compete, and that's not the case with every program. And for some reason, they've been able to do that against West Virginia. For some reason, they've been kind of able to do that against TCU. A little bit, obviously, against Texas Tech too. So, this would be big in terms of conference competitiveness, right? I mean, they need to prove that they can hang with teams in this league, and they did that last week. They hung around. They were in that game. Texas Tech has a brand new head coach. Those are the teams. Those are the times, more so than the teams. Those are the times that you have to find your chance to strike, and they have one today. So they've got to play well, they've got to play good football, they can't make mistakes, and there are still so many reasons and ways that this one can go wrong. But if they play with that same kind of effort that they gave last week, I think it'll be enough tonight. I just don't think Texas Tech's, you know, quite there. And again, they're building something themselves. So it comes at a perfect time for KU.
We're speaking with Matt Tate, who covers the University of Kansas for KUSports.com and Lawrence Journal World. You can follow him on Twitter at MC Tate. One quick update from Manhattan. Oklahoma was able to go down and score quickly and convert the a two-point conversion to make it a 10-point ball game with just under 5 minutes to go. They'll need to stop on third down to get the ball back because they've got two scores to get. So it may get a little tight here in the next few minutes, Matt. Hey, I want to flip over and talk a little KU basketball now. They opened up their exhibition season this week. And by all accounts, Matt, everybody survived Snoop Dogg. Nobody died. Everybody came back. There was no protest out front. Everybody still showed up to watch the Jayhawks play basketball.
Well, yeah, that's finally the point we're at, right? I mean, you know, after all the off-season stuff, and none of that's going away, by the way. Everybody knows that, I think. But that will linger for the next several months and will be a part of this season, whether people want it to be or not. It is. It very much is. And they're still in a very tough spot with a lot of uncertainty. But, yeah, now that the games are here and they had an exhibition game the other night, people were fired up to go out and watch basketball. It almost felt like business as usual there. And so now you can sort of dive a little bit more into the lineup and the rotation and, you know, who's going to fit in where and how the freshmen look and all those things that are normal with every other basketball season. You know, that's nice. It was wild because Wednesday was Big 12 Media Day at Sprint Center, and Self was over there for an hour fielding questions, at least as many questions about the allegations and the NCAA stuff as he did actual basketball questions. And then the very next day, you were able to sort of flip that switch and go watch the games and go watch team play. You know, they looked okay. It very much looked like a first game, a lot of rust. They didn't have Devon Dotson in the lineup. He hurt his ankle, just, you know, nothing serious, it doesn't sound like. In fact, he had a boot on for a couple of days, and then Thursday night he was not wearing the boot. So he's expected to be back this weekend, and he should be able to play next Thursday when they play Pitt State at home in their exhibition finale. So, it was a good thing to see, a good look at this group, and it's a new group, and it's a new team, and there's a lot to like about them. So, it's wild to have that game happening while people are still caring so much about football. I mean, I think this is absolutely the latest I can remember in a long time where Kansas fans are still very much intrigued by what's happening with the football program. And if they can get a win tonight, that continues for at least a couple more weeks. And that'll be interesting because obviously basketball's got some pretty big games coming up with Duke to open the season and the Maui Invitational after that, you know, but there's no doubt that these fans are skilled enough to be able to pay attention to both if that's warranted.
I laugh whenever I hear or whenever I watch the Maui Invitational because isn't it the Jim Maui Invitational?
right.
It's sponsored by the sunglasses company. I just think that's hilarious, but whatever.
It was match made in heaven. I mean, yeah. If it was anybody else sponsoring that thing, it'd be wrong, right?
Right. If it was the Ray-Ban Maui Invitation, that wouldn't work well. Hey, we're speaking with Matt Tate, KUSports.com and Lawrence Journal World. You can always get great stuff on there if you want to get some prep notes for the game tonight. A couple of things on the basketball team real quick from the exhibition game. Matt, I don't know if you're like me. I don't put a lot of stock into it. To me, it's a glorified practice. It's a chance to play somebody else and kind of run your sets without a lot of, you know, without a lot of pressure. But I still continue to be not amazed, but pleasantly surprised by Ochai Agbaji. And we've talked about this before. I covered him in high school at Oak Park, and I thought he was a really good basketball player, and I thought he'd find a chance to play somewhere. And when KU came in late, I was like, oh, yeah, that might be a little bit of a reach for him, but, you know, we'll see. And then he had the chance to play last year, had a good second half, and, you know, had the ups and downs of a freshman year, but he comes out in the game one with 21 points, and Marcus Garrett all of a sudden is just firing threes. I guess Bill Self whispered into his ear, you got to fire those a little more. So there's a couple of good things to take away from that game.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, he's poised to take a huge step, and he had such a good freshman year. But you know, he only played half the year, and he was going to redshirt, and then he was kind of figuring it all out on the fly and all that stuff. But, you know, having a full off season to kind of work on his game and know what his role is going to be and all that stuff, I think he's in for just a monster year. And he showed some good things the other night, a little bit of a slow start. But defensively, I think as much as anything, he showed what a factor he can be there. And because he's such a high flyer and a big-time dunker and all that, I think people generally think of him more offensively. But he can play some D too, and he's going to be a huge part of their team. And that's the funny thing. You get these big bodies going up against Fort Hays State the other night, and you expect that guys like Udoka and Silvio and those guys are going to just demolish them. But Fort Hays had a great plan. They swarmed them every time they caught the ball. They made them miserable, even though they were a full head or two below them standing height, they still caused some problems. And so I think Kansas is going to see a lot of that. And I think, you know, as much as they still won the game by 30, they did learn something from it. And they learned that they're going to have to figure out a way to play when teams play small against them and have that same approach. And so much of that will be the three-point shot, and Ochai hit a few. He didn't have a great start there either, but he finally knocked a couple down in the second half, and Marcus Garrett hit a few. But they're going to need all of those guys, Devon Dotson, Marcus Garrett, Ochai Agbaji, Isaiah Moss, the grad transfer from Iowa, and maybe one or two others. I mean, they're going to need all of those guys to consistently be able to knock in shots, because if they don't, they'll be way too easy to guard down there, because teams will just not let Udoka and Silvio and David McCormick do anything. They'll dare them to shoot from the outside, and if they don't shoot it well, it could be trouble. But they've got a ton of talent. They've got a ton of depth. They've got a lot of pieces that are both pieces to like and also pieces that are very versatile, that can fit into a bunch of different ways, a bunch of different positions, a bunch of different styles. And I think because of those things, that there's no doubt that, you know, even if it takes a little bit to kind of figure out exactly what works or maybe is sort of an ongoing process throughout the season, there's enough there to make this team really dangerous and be one of the top teams in the country for sure.
Speaking with Matt Tate, KUSports.com and Lawrence Journal World, just a couple of more. Actually, we'll do one more. I know you got a lot of work to do to get ready for the game tonight. You get through this the next exhibition game, and then it's time for the Champions Classic. You mentioned Duke, and then you'll have UNC Greensboro and Monmouth, so a little bit of a breather after the Duke game, and then you start getting into some more tough ones with these tournaments. But that's going to be, right out of the chute with Duke, you're going to find out how good you really are with all the five stars these both teams have.
There's no doubt about it. That's the best part about opening the season with the Champions Classic. As much as the emotions run high and KU fans don't want to lose to Duke or don't want to lose to Kentucky and Kentucky doesn't want to lose to Kansas and, you know, that whole thing with all four of those teams, it really truly is a win-win situation. Either you win the game and you open your season with a feel-good, big-time victory against another blue blood type opponent, or you lose the game and you walk away going, okay, well, we learned some things about ourselves and, hey, there's no shame in losing to Kentucky or there's no shame in losing to Duke. And so you can't really take it that hard in terms of just being a tough loss or anything like that. Now, the way it comes, the outcome, the way the thing goes, you know, how you lose is a big part of that. But big picture, it's win-win all the way. And so I think that's what makes it so cool. I'm glad they moved it up to open the season just because that's such a fun way for all four of those teams to start. And really a fun way for everybody that pays attention to college basketball to start. I mean, you know, you might be a Villanova fan or you might be an Oklahoma fan or you might, you know, root for somebody in Florida or whatever. But Tuesday, November 5th, when those games are on back-to-back on ESPN, you're going to flip them on and you're going to watch because that's the best of the best playing basketball and college basketball is officially back. So it's a great way to start. There's no better place to do it than New York City. I can't wait to see that. The last time we were out there for this game was the Frank Mason game when he hit the jumper to beat Duke in Madison Square Garden. And, you know, what a cool moment that was for Mason and what a cool start that was to what became one of the all-time best seasons in KU and Big 12 history. I mean, it's fun to look back at those things and think about how, you know, that was really the infant stages of what was a sign of things to come, because Mason was amazing that year, and And KU's been really good in this event lately. You know, after limping out of the gates with a few losses there, they've won a few in a row, and they definitely feel kind of like they have these other teams' numbers right now. And all that goes in cycles, but there's no doubt that they'll walk into Madison Square Garden fully expecting to beat Duke, and it'll be a dogfight.
All right, Matt, thank you very much, and I encourage all the KU fans, if you want the best information before the game, after the game, during the game on Twitter, just follow Matt Tate's work on Twitter, at MC Tate. You can go to the website, kusports.com, as part of the Lawrence Journal World. Matt, have fun tonight, and we'll look forward to your reports after the game tonight.
Sounds good, Brad. Thanks for having me on, man. Enjoy your day.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Matt Tate, kusports.com, and the Lawrence Journal World. Good stuff. And if you're going over to Lawrence for the game, special Ring of Honor inductee tonight, Daryl Stuckey, who was on the Orange Bowl team. He's a Kansas City kid. Washington High School was not being recruited by anybody early on in his junior or senior season in high school. Went over to a camp in KU. I think they had a free camp. He didn't have the money to go to a big-time camp. And the Jayhawks saw him at that camp over there and said, you know what, Daryl Stuckey, how would you like to come and play at KU? Ended up being one of the best defensive backs, safeties in KU history. Went on to the NFL, was a special teams captain for the San Diego Chargers for many years. He is now retired, and he's a super good guy and does a lot of work for kids in the Kansas City community. Lives back here with his wife, and it's all good stuff. So Daryl Stuckey, give him a nice ovation tonight when he goes into the KU Ring of Honor. Quick update before the break. Oklahoma has just kicked a field goal to make it 48-41 with 1:45 to go in the fourth quarter. They're going to be lining up to kick off, and I'm going to guess it's going to be an onside kick. On that note, we'll take a timeout. Let the suspense linger. We'll come back with more right after this. You're listening to Sports Saturday. Joshua Byers started the show. Charlie Carlin is now in the hot seat. And my name is Brad Porter. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right. We got drama in Manhattan, Kansas right now. Oh, man. K-State had a 48-23 lead with 12:54 to go in the fourth quarter. Oklahoma has been scoring at will in the final 8 minutes. They got it down to a one-possession game. There's about 1:24 left on the clock. Oklahoma went to kick the onside kick, appeared to recover it. The play is under review. The ball may have hit an Oklahoma player before it went 10 yards. So we were going to toss to an interview here, but I'm going to wait just a second because this is... Okay, at the top of the 2 o'clock hour when I brought Matt Tate on, I said, this game's been an ass-kicking. K-State has kicked their ass all over the field in the second half. They were leading 48-23 with 12:54 to go in the fourth quarter. Oklahoma has stormed all the way back to make it a 48-41 game with 1:43 left on the clock. Play is under review. Oklahoma got a touchdown. They got a two-point conversion, lined up for the onside kick. They got it down. It went through a couple of K-State players. Oklahoma recovered it. They thought they had it, but this play is under review because they think it may have hit the back leg of an Oklahoma player before it went 10 yards. Oh, man. Oh, gee, mini Christmas. Oh, if you're a K-State fan right now or an Oklahoma fan right now. I mean, Oklahoma, this could be your chance at the playoffs if you lose this game. This may affect the Heisman voting for Jalen Hurts. I don't know. Never know what goes through the minds of the voters. There's a lot on the line with this call. This call goes K-State's way. And even though they've kind of, unfortunately, let Oklahoma back into this game when they should have put the nail in the coffin, it still would be a huge win. Okay, we're getting a signal here. And the signal is the ball illegally touched an Oklahoma player before it went 10 yards. Oklahoma has the call overturned. It'll be K-State football with 1:43 left to go, leading 48-41. Whew! Man, if K-State would have blown a 48-23 lead at home, even I know it's Oklahoma. Yes, they're really good. I get that. But after you spent a whole quarter in the opening couple of minutes of the fourth quarter just kicking Oklahoma's ass, now Lincoln Riley is reading the riot act to the officials on the sideline. So let's just stick with this for a couple of minutes, okay? And then we'll go. I wanted to play, if you missed College Game Day with Danny Klingscale and Stan Weber this morning, they had a great conversation with Bob Bowlsby, the commissioner of the Big 12, talking about a lot of things, about eligibility, compensating players for name, image, and likeness, a bunch of stuff. It was a really great conversation. So I thought, okay, we'll play that back during the afternoon show. Not counting that we would have this kind of drama over in Manhattan. Yes, I'm purposely mispronouncing it. I know it's a drama. I always say drama, though. So we're going to wait a second. Lincoln Riley's just he keeps pointing to the video board like now the call's going to change back. Oh, well, Lincoln Riley says, look at the video board. We just reviewed it. We just watched the replay 47 times up in the booth. But the referee on the field's going to say, oh, you're right, Lincoln. Go ahead and run it back on the Jumbotron. At least that's my impression of Lincoln Riley's voice. I'm sure that's not it. Okay, let's... K-State's lining up in victory formation. So the clock is going to start rolling now, a minute 40. It's going to be 48-41, and K-State is going to win this football game. So on that note, we'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll listen to the conversation that Danny Klingscale and Stan Weber had with Bob Bowlsby, commissioner of the Big 12. You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810, WHB. Back on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810, WHB, on a sun-splashed fall day across Kansas City and the entire metro area. 810 cranking out 50,000 watts. You can also get the app at 810WHB.com. Charlie Carlin is now running the show. My name is Brad Porter. Coming up at 3 o'clock, Jed Marshall is going to join us. We'll talk Chiefs football. We'll talk college football. We'll talk American soccer superstar Christian Pulisic scoring a hat trick for Chelsea today. That's Jed's team. So good news there. A little bit of everything. And then we're going to try to get Riley Gates on at 4 o'clock. Riley from GoPowerCat.com, he's covering the K-State Wildcats, and they just got a huge upset over Oklahoma in Manhattan, 48-41. They actually led 48-23 at the beginning of the fourth quarter, almost blew it. Oklahoma thought they had recovered an onside kick. The ruling was the ball made illegal contact with an Oklahoma player, and therefore it was K-State's ball, and they could kneel down. Jed Marshall texted me, "Oh, you got hosed." So we'll see what I can't. It's a tiny TV in here, the one that the K-State game was on, so I couldn't see it clearly. So I'll ask Jed about that. So we'll do that right now. By the way, that's K-State's first win over a top five team since 2006. It's been a minute. All right, this morning on College Game Day with Danny Klingscale and Stan Weber, which is how I start every Saturday because I like it. It's always good stuff. You interview great coaches and radio people and good stuff. They taped an interview with Bob Bowlsby, the Big 12 commissioner this week, in town for the Big 12 Media Days. Covered a lot of ground in the interview, so we cut out a portion of it. Where we're going to pick this up, and again, this is Danny and Stan speaking with Bob Bowlsby, the commissioner of the Big 12. We'll pick it up with the fact that some fans were not happy about the fact that the Big 12 had not one, not two, but three 11 a.m. kickoffs today. Bob Bowlsby explains.
Well, it usually doesn't happen that we have three at 11 because there's a selection process that Fox and ESPN go through, and they do it on a season-long basis, and one takes their first pick, and the other takes their first pick, and then second, and so on throughout the season. And so they leave some of them for selection 2 weeks ahead of time, and there's even circumstances where they make a selection a week ahead of time where the outcomes are unknown, and they want to make sure that they get the best matchup. And the fact is we've sold them that option. We could go back to them and say we don't want to play at 11 o'clock, or we don't want to play in Texas during the heat of September or in the middle of the day, we could go back and do all of those things. It would influence the amount of payment that we receive from the networks, but we could certainly do that. You know, as an example, with ESPN Plus, we now have control over the starting times of games. So, you know, if we want to play at 1 o'clock, we can play at 1 o'clock. If we want to play a basketball game at 5:30 or 8:30, we can do that. So, you know, when you sell your rights to a television partner, they buy some prerogatives, and they like to have a strong game coming out of the 11 o'clock window. And some game, some Saturdays, frankly, the Pac-12 or the Big Ten, in the case of Fox, might have stronger games that they want to put at 2:30 or at 6:30, and ESPN may have a situation where they just, you know, they need to manage their entire schedule vis-a-vis the other conferences as well as us. But it's a partnership, but it's also a selection order that that is solely their prerogative.
You mentioned ESPN Plus and Big 12 now. It's all new, and with basketball season coming on, it's really becoming even more relevant. But there have been football games put on this new function. You mentioned one of the real advantages being able to decide what time you want to have kickoff games. Do you have an idea? Do you have a guess yet when they have a chance to play football games, what's going to be chosen as a time? And tell us a little bit about where we are in the selection process. This is also the year that the ACC network was kicked off in partnership with ESPN. So there's a good compare and contrast right there about what the Big 12 is doing and how things are going and what you see in the future.
Well, relative to the ACC network, and back to the television selection process, one of the things you're seeing now is ACC games on Friday evening, which in the middle Midwest is something we really don't want to do. But when you have your own linear network, you're going to be playing in windows that you haven't been playing in before. The Big Ten and the ACC are both playing on Friday evenings, and so you know, it's an example of you kind of take what you get when you sell your rights. But they have the enviable situation in the ACC footprint of having almost 100 million people in the states up and down the Eastern Seaboard, and so there are a lot of cable households in that environment. In our footprint, with our five states, we have 35 million people, and 27 million of those are in Texas. So we have a different demographic, and so therefore have to go after a different solution to it. But as to the preferred time on the ESPN Plus game, whatever sport they're in, that will be up to the schools. The home school will work with the visitors and come up with a starting time. And in the case of a member retained game that would go on ESPN Plus, typically these are games that would have been on a local network in the past, and our models are sort of all over the place. All 10 of our schools have a third tier model of some sort. But we now are in the process of aggregating those and putting them on the ESPN Plus platform. And I don't have any hesitation that we're on the right side of technology. Digital distribution and mobile consumption is going to be the trend in the years ahead. The cable universe is shrinking about 1.5% to 2.5% a year, and it's going to keep shrinking. So that universe is not going to get larger, and particularly young people are adopters of streaming and digital distribution. So I believe we're on the right side of technology. I believe we have the right partners in Disney and ESPN, and it's a bit of an experiment. You know, we had some weather problems on the K-State Oklahoma State game a couple weeks ago, and we were only off the air for about 4 minutes, but it's disruptive and it's maddening to fans, and we know that. Having said that, however, Stan, I was involved in the Big Ten network rollout and the Pac-12 network rollout, and both of those had significant carriage issues where there were areas of the country where you just couldn't get the signal because the cable carrier wasn't carrying it. So in terms of startups, this one has been much smoother than some of the others I've been involved in.
Well, we're already having problems with that. Well, we're still having problems with the Pac-12 network. I just, it's hard hard to see when I'm in hotels all over the country, and here at home, I don't hear many people talking about it. So there are these challenges. One clarification I'd like to have, maybe I can hopefully simplify this for the listeners. I think everyone understands that there are certain games that are not part of the basketball package. It's called third tier. Last night, for instance, I was on television or on what we call Big 12 Now on ESPN Plus for K-State basketball. It was an exhibition game. It's something that K-State controls, like the Texas Longhorn Network. They control that. So it makes a lot of sense that there are going to be those games, and now K-State games aren't going to be on FSN. They're going to be on ESPN Plus. So that's pretty easy to follow. But can you clarify for me, in football, it was my understanding, if I go back a year or two, that one of the 12 regular season games was going to be kind of a third tier, that school's obligation to figure out how they want to show up for Texas. They had a Texas Longhorn game. When we talk about ESPN Plus, is there's just still one game for the school? And then how do games get pulled into ESPN Plus if it's part of the conference's responsibility? Kind of sort that out, because K-State, Oklahoma State being on ESPN Plus is new to everyone, and I just don't know, is that happening once in a while? Is it going to happen all the time next year? What are the rules and regulations as you see it?
Well, it's a great question, Stan, and I'm glad you asked it, because it's really pertinent. The 2012 contract that we have with ESPN gives them the prerogative to put games on ESPN 1, ESPN 2, which are the two where most of our games are. But they can also put games on ESPNU, they can put games on ESPN News, and they can put games on ESPN 3, which is an internet-based distribution. And so the language in the contract gives them prerogatives to put some of those games onto other networks. Now, the Oklahoma State Kansas State game was moved on that basis. They have that prerogative by virtue of their original contract. Even though ESPN Plus didn't exist at that time, they have the option to put it on another platform, which is what they did. Now, in a lot of ways, it's a compliment to our league, because they really believe, and I think they're absolutely correct, that we're the best inventory that is on the ESPN platform. That's why they went ahead and gave us a dedicated landing page, and we have some considerations that are different than anybody else that's on there. But it is obvious that they want to drive subscriptions and cause people to come in and adopt this new technology. And I think they wanted to put some of those better games on there. We moved two games, K-State, Oklahoma State game and one other. And the reason they did it is they want to drive subscriptions. And we're going to put a couple of high-profile games on ESPN Plus during the basketball season for the exact same reason. But you can get the service with about four clicks. It's very easy. You can watch it on your mobile device. You can watch it on your iPad. You can watch it on your home TV if you've got Apple TV or Roku or Hulu or a bunch of other things. And it's change. I remember when we moved from broadcast TV to cable, people were astonished that, well, I just want to turn on and watch it on Channel 5. And that was, the change was a big disruption at that point. And now, we don't even think about it. Everybody more or less has cable. So I recognize that it's a transition, and I recognize that those kinds of transitions are sometimes it's difficult to break old habits. But the quality of the production is good. The announced teams are just like a linear network, and we feel very good about being on the right side of technology.
We have 8 million things we could talk to you about, and we can probably only talk about six. So
six million? Okay, this is gonna be good.
Not 6 million.
I love talking to you, Commissioner. You, it's very understandable, your answers.
Let's. Last week we had Gary Patterson, the TCU head coach, on this program, and we were talking about the redshirt rules, basically now, which have been changed, and he had some interesting answers to questions we asked about it, and it falls into the area of, I think, unintended consequences with these new red shirt rules that are far more.
You can play up to four games and not count that year against your eligibility.
Yeah, far more flexible. And, you know, if a thing's in place, then it's up to the coach not to worry about what it looks like or what it looks like to me. What it is to work things to his advantage. He's got a wide variety, for instance, of running backs, and he's like staggering games with these guys so that he doesn't even have to make a decision as to whether he's going to put a red shirt on somebody until, say, week nine. Is this what we were looking for when we changed this to perhaps help out students?
And we got the transfer stuff as well. Right. So just what do you think about that rule? How's it playing out, and what do others in the nation think about it?
Well, as you may know, I was chair of the Football Oversight Committee of the NCAA at the time that this rule was put in. And actually, interestingly enough, Coach Patterson was the president of the chairman of the board of the American Football Coaches Association. And so we worked together carefully on this. And I can assure you there was no anticipation of kids playing four games and then deciding to transfer. This was really it emanated out of our league, as a matter of fact. West Virginia had a situation late in the season a couple of years ago where they didn't have any running backs. They just didn't have anybody there wasn't redshirted, and they had to take a kid off of a redshirt the last game of the season. And, you know, I don't think anybody wants to do that, have a young man burn a year of eligibility to help his team for one game. And yet most kids would say, sure, I'll do whatever it takes to help my team. So the four games emanated out of that, and you hit it right on the head. There have been some unintended consequences. One of them may be to send more kids to the transfer portal. Although I would say, the number of people in both basketball and football that are in the transfer portal is about maybe 10% higher than what the transfers were in those two sports previously. In basketball, the transfer numbers were very high to begin with, something approaching 50%. And in football, it wasn't quite that high. But generally speaking, there are a lot of young people in there, especially in the sport of football, that are walk-ons, that are out shopping for a scholarship. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's another unintended consequence. So there's some work to do in that space. I think we have to take the unintended consequences out of the four-game redshirt process. There has been talk about going to 5 years of eligibility. I'm not sure that one sport can necessarily do that. This was sort of a middle ground, but there have been a couple of things that were not intended. The whole concept of trying to be the starter for four games, and then if that doesn't happen, you withhold a starter. There's been some institutions that have done that and stockpiled for the next year, and so we have some work to do on it. I'm not on football oversight any longer, but Shane Lyons, the director of athletics at West Virginia, is, and so we're staying close to the flame on what's going on. But those are the transfer environment and the four game redshirt. Both of them require some fine-tuning.
We can see some fine-tuning, and I'll just throw a couple of things out just to remind fans how we've moved. We got grad transfers. That means if you get your degree at one university, you are allowed to go to the next university, and you might have 2 years of eligibility left or one, but you can move on and you don't have to sit out. We're all accepting of that now. However, it may or may not work. It could be tweaked, but we know about that. And then you got this new thing where you get four games you can play before you use up your eligibility. The example he gave is old Dana Holgorsen, who's moved from the Big 12 to Houston, had his starting quarterback stop after four games ago. Let's reset next year if you're okay with it. And everybody said fine. So at least that they were all on the same page. But the thing that I need to ask you about that I cannot get my hands on, those two I can follow, and we need to tweak and massage and improve on, okay? But what about the transfer who just transfers, goes to the portal and transfers to another school, has not received a degree, and it's very simple in the old days. Sit out a year, and be ready to play that next year. But we are seeing exceptions all over the board. We're even hearing coaches talking about it at Big 12 Media Days in Kansas City the other day in basketball. One of the coaches just said it out there. It just seems like everybody transfers and assumes they're going to get an exception and be able to play right away, not the grad transfer, but when they should sit out a year. Where are we with that? Because I don't feel comfortable with how that one's what the rules are or how we're playing it out now.
Well, I'm with you on the discomfort on that. To take it even a step further, it is now part of the recruiting process. Kids are asking, okay, coach, if I decide that this isn't for me, are you going to advocate for me to have a waiver? And I think we have a fair amount of work to do in the transfer environment. If I'm the benevolent dictator, I would say we should have kids sit in all sports for a year if you transfer, and the cynics will say, well, yeah, but you don't have coaches transfer. Well, the student athletes are not employees. They are there to. There ought to be some educational components to any time that they transfer, and we know that it's mostly about playing time and access to the playing surfaces. And so, I don't want to be Pollyannish about it, but the fact is, we are institutions of higher education, and you're there to get a degree, and a year in residence is actually a positive thing. The academic metrics are very clear. A year in residence is a good thing and enhances graduation. And the long and the short of it is, what we've done over a very long period of time is the sports where the recruiting is red hot and where we really care about it, we've had young people have to sit out. In the other sports, we've said, well, if a golfer transfers, okay, so be it. We're not going to worry about it. The waivers have gotten very problematic because it's very erratic as to what causes a waiver. I mean, if you get yourself a lawyer and the lawyer pounds his fist loud enough and long enough, more often than not, you get a waiver. And I just think whatever we do, we've got to get out of the waiver space. And I think the right way to do it is to say, hey, if you have personal reasons for one to transfer closer to home, or if you feel like you want to try a different system and different coaching staff, all of those things can be helped by a year in residence, and I just think it's the right way to manage it. But, there are others who disagree with that, and there may be legal implications that I'm not aware of, but we do have some work to do in this space. There isn't any doubt about it, and the variability of who gets waivers and how they get waivers and how many they get is just not in a very good place right now.
I agree with you. The inconsistency is really the big issue for me. And I'm a little worried about unintended consequences of, hey, Danny plays a great game and I'm the coach and I walk over and shake his hand and say, I really love the way you play. I'm at a little bit bigger school. Like, I really love the way you play. And if that kid's thinking, hey, I could go there next year and be a starter, it's just, it throws a curveball to the kids. Unfair. They need to say, oh, there's a big trade-off. I better make sure I want to go there, because I wanted to sit out a year. But right now, it can get a little crazy. I hope you're able to keep your backbone on it. And out of fairness and for a lot of reasons, I can live with a lot of these new rules. They just need to be consistently applied.
Well, it's borderline free agency is what it is. I mean, in basketball.
The interesting piece about the transfer environment is, had we not gotten into a situation where coaches were saying, you can transfer to this league but not that league, you can transfer to this school and not that school, had they not been trying to exercise authority over where kids transferred once they've made the decision to go, we probably wouldn't be in this situation, because that's really what was the cause of the transfer portal and some of the things that we have right now. So we need to take responsibility for the actions or inactions that got us in this situation.
All right, that was the conversation with Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesme that was played this morning on College Game Day with Danny Klinkscale and Stan Weber. I heard it when I was getting breakfast rolling this morning, and I thought it might be nice to play in the afternoon to let you hear what the commissioner thinks on some of those issues. We'll take a quick timeout because we are way long right now. When we come back, we'll get you updated on some college scores. We'll talk about the wild finish in Manhattan where K-State upset Oklahoma. And I guarantee Jed Marshall has some thoughts about the way that game ended, or the call that was made at the end of the game. So we'll do that with Jed next. You are listening to Sports Saturday. Charlie Carlin is running the board. My name is Brad Porter. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.